Hello and welcome to this week's Liverpool.com podcast. I'm your host, Matt Addison, with no Mo Stewart this week. Apologies about that. But to make up for it, I do have both Emmett Gates and Charlotte Coates alongside me. Emmett, it's a Liverpool.com podcast debut for yourself. Welcome along.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
Yeah, very much so. Very interesting topic to jump into today, despite it being an international break. And of course, Liverpool, with that 2-2 draw against Manchester City, we assessed that on the Blood Red podcast on Monday. So we thought we'd do something slightly different for you today on this episode of the show. We're going to assess the season as a whole so far, but through the sort of lens, if you like, of Liverpool's squad depth. So what have we learnt? What might be to come? And are we happy with the state of Jurgen Klopp's squad at this moment in time? I know it's only 7 games in, but still plenty to get stuck into. So, Charlotte, I'll come to you first. I think we probably should start with the defence. I think we're probably all happy enough with the goalkeepers, Alisson Becker and Gwyneth Kelleher, so far absolutely fine. But in defence, I think it's fair to say there's a few talking points. Probably James Milner, the biggest one of all. Obviously, I said we're very early in the season. Already he's had to play at right back 3 times. What have you made of him so far in that position?
As just filling in like for 1 or 2 games, it's fine. In like obviously against Crystal Palace, he was great, kept Zaha quiet. But on Sunday against Manchester City, as we saw, Phil Foden really enjoyed his time against him, as you would assume a 21-year-old going up against a 35-year-old, someone with his talent as well. He was always gonna give him a tough game, and he was very lucky not to be sent off. But also following in the footsteps of Trent, someone who gives Liverpool such creative output, and what he does is very unique for that right back position. So you can't expect Milner to come in and fill that. And that's also why it's so hard to find a right back who can come in and fill in for Trent if he's injured or needs a rest, because who can provide that in world football, and he's willing to sit on a bench.
Yeah, it's a very, very difficult task, isn't it? And I suppose that would be the argument that Jurgen Klopp made, Emmett, that obviously if Trent's not there, Liverpool have to find a creative solution. James Milner, for most games, isn't going to be the worst option, but maybe the Manchester City one was probably the wrong outcome of the gamble, if you like. If you want him to miss any games, Trent, it's probably not a title clash with Pep Guardiola's side.
Yeah, I think there's definitely games in which you can utilise Milner at right back. Obviously, he was right back against Palace and Porto, but there's a big difference between, with all due respect, playing Crystal Palace and Porto and playing Pep Guardiola's Man City. I just think, obviously, City targeted him, and two of City's goals came from the right-hand side. Obviously, with the second one, Milner had been taken off, and Joe Gomez was at right back. But Milner was taken to pieces in that first half, especially. João Cancelo kept hitting balls on the outside of his right foot, getting in behind Milner for City's attack. And yeah, I just think you can't be playing a 35-year-old at right back against Man City. Against Palace, Porto, Norwich, whoever, okay, but not against City, no way.
What do you think the solution is to that then? Would it have been better to go with Joe Gomez to begin with? Or, I mean, I think it's fair to say Milner was probably quite lucky not to be sent off before he was substituted. Do you think that would have made a difference to Liverpool, or are this edition of Liverpool beyond using Joe Gomez, I should say, in that position from the start?
I mean, Gomez is obviously a centre-back, but at the same time, he still has pace. I felt Milner's problem yesterday was he was just getting destroyed with pace from Foden, from Kevin De Bruyne, from João Cancelo. They kept getting in behind him. So at least Gomez is, what, 24? So he's maybe it's not his natural position, but at least he's quick enough. Perhaps if City, for example, say, got in behind him, he would be quick enough to resolve the situation, whereas Milner just, you know, at his age, doesn't have the pace that he had maybe 10, 12 years ago to get out of tricky situations. So unless, I mean, you're talking maybe a tactical reshuffle and Liverpool maybe going 3 at the back, at 3-4-3 maybe, and just having maybe Gomez, Van Dijk and Matip as centre-backs, and then maybe playing Robinson, as a left wing back, but then again, that's a system Klopp has arguably never used. So then you're getting into, you know, players not really playing in positions that they're comfortable with. So I would say maybe for now, maybe just try Gomez at right back in high profile games and see how he gets on.
I suppose that sort of leads us quite nicely onto to the centre-back situation as well, Charlotte. We've not seen a huge amount of Gomez or even less of Ibrahima Konaté so far this season, but Liverpool do have depth there. There's no doubt about that. And I suppose moving forward, we're probably going to see a fair bit more of them, of what we've seen so far.
Yeah, I did think we'd see more of Konaté because obviously he was a big money signing. Well, our only signing in the summer. And the fact that Van Dijk, Matip come back from long injuries. But it's so hard to not drop but rest someone like Van Dijk because of what he brings to the side, like the leadership. And if he's fit, you want him to play every game, don't you? So it's hard to split him up. And Matip's been one of our best players so far this season. Him keeping fit could be huge for us. But yeah, it's tough on Gomez because him and Van Dijk during our title-winning season they were brilliant. They were brilliant together, and he was getting better and better next to Van Dijk. And now the bond that they've formed during the rehab together, but the injury he got, it makes you wonder. Like it's a bit of an unknown because it's a rare injury. Not many people get it. So seeing how he comes back from that, can he reach them levels again? It will be interesting to see that.
I think for me, Emmett, looking at the sort of squad depth across the back line, we'll talk about Kostas Tsimikas and the performances that he's put in a few minutes' time. But you look at left back, there's a lot of squad depth. You look at centre back, there's a lot of squad depth. There's really good players in both of those positions that probably aren't going to get a load of minutes, or probably not as many minutes as what they might get if they were at other clubs, certainly. But then you look at right back and it's a slightly different situation. So as much as what I said before about Trent being a very difficult player to have a backup for, and maybe Jurgen Klopp doesn't want the biggest squad, he does have that in other areas. So maybe there's an argument that at right back there is a bit of a gap there because, well, they've got Tsimikas to back up Robertson. Why can't you do the same at right back?
Yeah, and an ideal scenario, what you would want is a right-sided Tsimikas. You know, you basically want someone who can come in. He won't get 30, 35 games a season, but he will provide good cover when he's called, relied upon. But again, as Charlotte said, it's hard to find players that will willingly accept, you know, spending 75% of the season on the bench, and then when they're called upon to, you know, be an adequate replacement. So Liverpool are in a tough situation. And as you say, they've covered at left back and they've 6-7 centre backs now, you know, compared to last season when Fabinho and Henderson had to play at centre back at certain points. So I think going forward, it is definitely an area that Liverpool need to target and bring in someone. They've Nico Williams, but I mean, he's on the periphery of things and he's only, what, 20, 21. It would be a big ask, I think, to throw him in the deep end against Man City and say, here you go, Nico. You know, I think maybe in January or in the summer, it is definitely an area that Liverpool need to focus on and try and bring someone in. You know, maybe someone 25, 26, an experienced player, but not too experienced. It's a difficult situation. Obviously, you don't want to spend too, you know, go big on a big signing because they are essentially a backup. But again, it has to be an adequate backup. So it is a very murky situation.
We do see, though, don't we, Charlotte? You know, it happened last season at right back. Trent missed, I think, a month with a calf problem last season. He's had little injuries in the past. It's not as if he has a perfect injury record himself. So if you were trying to sell it to somebody else to come in and be a backup, there is a little glimmer of a few games each season. You can maybe make the argument as well that we've seen maybe a better Andy Robertson this season because he's had Tsimikas right behind him. I suppose the argument for Liverpool would be that, you know, if they can get somebody in, it has that double benefit as well as the fact that you've got that backup player when you need him.
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, Trent does pick up little injuries, especially when you're going away with the national team, you're playing Champions League, you're going to pick up little injuries, and it's important for players to be rested as well. But Trent never really seems to, he never gets rested because there is no one to come in. It's whoever we bring into the side who isn't Trent is a big drop off in quality. Whereas now you're looking at Tsimikas with Robertson. Robertson's one of the best in the league, but Tsimikas is, he's doing a job, isn't he, when he comes in? It's not really looking like we're missing much. But on the other side, you're missing so much with Trent not there. But yeah, it is difficult to find someone to come in because like of what Trent brings to the side. But like you said, they will get chances. So it's not as if you're going to come into Liverpool and you're going to just be there because it's a big club and you might win things and never play, because you will get games.
And just before we move on to the midfield and have a chat about that, Emmett, just finally on that right-back situation, do you think it's just important to get another body in there, or is it a case of almost an exact replica of Tsimikas, being that he is very, very similar stylistically to Robertson? Is it important to have that stylistic similarity on the right-hand side? Or if there isn't that stylistic similarity, is it better just to have someone there just, you know, to bridge that gap at least a little bit, do you think?
Well, it's kind of what you alluded to in terms of on the other side, Robinson is doing better because he has genuine competition. If you bring in someone, and Trent Alexander-Arnold knows that they're likely, you know, they're nowhere near as good as he is, it's not real competition, and therefore it doesn't drive him on to improve and become better. So it's a difficult one to say. You know, obviously there is an aspect of just getting another body in, just in case, you know, he picks up another niggling injury and he's out for a couple of games, and just another body on the right side. But are they going to pose genuine competition, which is kind of what every manager wants? You know, every manager wants the number two to be providing as good a competition as possible to the number one player in the position. So it is a tricky situation, I feel.
Yeah, it's not an easy one to solve at all, is it? And I suppose that probably explains why Liverpool haven't solved it up until this point. But who knows, maybe in a couple of years' time, Conor Bradley might be a suitable deputy to Trent Alexander-Arnold. I know there was a lot of talk about that this summer, slightly premature, I think. But I think it's fair to say then, having summarised it, we're pretty happy with the centre-backs. We're happy very much with the left-backs, and maybe not quite so at right-back. But we'll move on to midfield then, and plenty of discussion and debate to have in that area as well. Of course, we've seen the horrible injury to Harvey Elliott that's going to keep him out for a number of months. Probably more predictable, Charlotte, though, were the injuries to Naby Keita and now Thiago. Did Liverpool do enough in the summer, do you think, in terms of the number of bodies, just given that injury history of those players that I mentioned there?
No, I was shocked they didn't bring anyone in after losing someone like Wijnaldum, who it seemed like he played every single game. He was never injured. And obviously, like, he was very talented. He was a great player for us. But it was that availability he brought, which was something that we're going to miss because, like you said, Keita, how many games can he play in a row? Ox can't seem to find any form, picks up his injuries. And now, obviously, with Thiago's injury, Elliot's injury, we're looking very light in the midfield. And then you've got to ask Henderson, 31 years old, playing three games in a week, looks leggy in the City game, and then it, like, without it really being his fault. So I don't know, it's not really, it might be a bit of a struggle there. It might be a bit of a centre-back situation there if things get a little worse.
I think that stood out to me at the weekend, Emmett, looking at Liverpool's midfield. Obviously, they turned it around in the second half. They were much improved, but particularly in the first half, you just felt like they were lacking Gini Wijnaldum. And it's obviously a really obvious point to make, given they've lost him and not replaced him. But sometimes it's obvious because it's true.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is, on paper, at the beginning of the season, you looked at Liverpool's midfield and you thought, okay, well, they haven't replaced Ronaldo, but there's still enough bodies in the midfield area, you know, to get through the season. But then when you sit down and think about it, you think, well, they're only a couple of injuries away from, you know, the situation kind of getting worse. And that's obviously what happened. Harvey Elliott, the game against Leeds, what, third, fourth game of the season, picks up that injury, you know, unfortunate, and he's out for probably the remainder of the season. Or at being the most optimistic, he may come back maybe the last couple of games before the season. Naby Keita, you know, he's missed over 50 games since he joined Liverpool, he was never going to last a full season, or it would have been close to a miracle if he had, you know, played a full season. And now, as Charlotte said, Liverpool did look very leggy against Man City in the first half. In the second half, I felt in the first 20 minutes of the second half, it was the old Liverpool that were pressing high up the pitch, and then two of the goals kind of came from Liverpool in that really good spell. But yeah, you kind of look at not replacing Ronaldo and you just think maybe they should have just offered him what he wanted, because, I mean, to sign a Ronaldo replacement, you probably have to shell out 30, 40, 50 million anyway between transfer fees and wages. So why not save yourself a transfer fee and just give Ronaldo what he wants for 3 or 4 years? But I know that goes kind of against FSG's policy, you know, with players over 30. So on the one hand, you can see why they did it. But on the other hand, it's exactly in situations like this where you feel Ronaldo would have been brilliant, you know, against City.
Yeah, I think that's kind of my feeling on it, to be fair, Charlotte. It's not necessarily that Gini Wijnaldum was allowed to leave. I can understand the logic behind that. Liverpool have got a couple of those players of a similar age, but just not bringing somebody else in that area. Even, to be honest, the argument in the summer was that you could buy someone that could play in midfield and attack. We'll talk about the attack separately in a few minutes, but it does feel like they're one short.
Yeah, it does. Thiago, 30s. Henderson's in his 30s. There's no one who can really fill in for Fabinho, so he's going to play every game when he's fit. And then, obviously, the emergence of Harvey Elliott was a big bonus in the midfield. Like, we were going into the season and not really expecting that. So if you take that away, which obviously don't have that option now, but we're even a man lighter. Curtis Jones, 20 years old, a lot's going to be put on his shoulders now. A lot of expectation, but you've got to hope that Keita, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Thiago, they can stay fit, and especially Oxlade-Chamberlain, Keita can really start to show what they can do.
You mentioned Chamberlain and Keita there. I know you've written a piece for Liverpool.com on Monday about the pair of them and obviously their future moving forward, Charlotte. I mean, I'll come back to you on this one. It's a big season for them, isn't it? All the talk is about Mohamed Salah and his contract, but these two have only got less than 2 years left on their deals as well. And particularly Oxlade-Chamberlain, he's not getting much of a look in, and obviously you can't impress unless you're on the pitch.
Yeah, exactly. They were both two years left, and they were both big money transfers. So it's hard to imagine Liverpool extending both the deals, but it's also hard to imagine Liverpool letting them both go. So just purely because of the money they'd have to spend to replace both players. So you're thinking they're both fighting for the futures here, pretty much both against each other. But like I said, Ox isn't really, he's not getting a look in. And it's, when he does, it's 5-10 minutes at the end of a match, and he's being brought on like in a false nine position, where when he was at his best in Liverpool, he was in that midfield, like, being energetic and driving forward with the ball. But now you don't see any of that. It's like, I know he had his bad injury and it was a real shame because it happened at a time where he was in great form. We were in Champions League semi-final. Like, he was brilliant for us. But I don't know what it is, whether it's confidence, lack of rhythm, but he can't seem to get back to close to that player.
I think for me, the biggest thing with Oxlade-Chamberlain, Emmett, is that he's a player that needs to play regularly and have a consistent run in the side to get anywhere near his best. He's not going to be able to show his best unless he's at that level of being in the team week in, week out for a certain period, which just seems like a long, long way away from that being the case at the moment.
Yeah,
but I think Sorry, go on.
Yeah, it does. Like you said, he needs a run in the team. And some players are like that. They do need a run in the side where they can't really come off the bench. And I don't know, like Roberto Firmino's a bit like that. He comes off the bench and he doesn't really do much better when you're starting. So Ox, yeah, you need to get your rhythm. You need to play. And it's confidence as well. Being picked by the manager from the start for games in a row, it gives you confidence. And a lot of footballers, even though they're elite Premier League footballers, confidence is massive for them.
Charlotte mentions there, Emmett, the sort of battle between Oxlade-Chamberlain and Keita. Maybe we don't expect both of them to get new contracts, but if you had to pick one at this moment in time, which way would you be going with it? Is it a case of one of them being ahead of the other, or is it both almost not as bad as each other? That sounds bad, doesn't it? But there's certain negative aspects of both of their games.
I would go with Naby Keita more because Klopp has already used him. You know, he started the opening two games of the season, whereas Oxlade-Chamberlain's only started what, once? He started against Norwich, I think, on opening day, and then he was used against Norwich again in the Carabao Cup. So he clearly likes Naby Keita more, and I think Naby Keita can probably offer more, but it's just his track record of injuries is horrendous. You know, if you sneeze in Naby Keita, it seems he gets injured. And I think that if there had been a decent offer for Oxlade-Chamberlain last summer, Liverpool probably would have sold, if you were being honest about it. Whereas I think with Naby Keita, because Liverpool paid so much money for him like 3 years ago, they want to try and get something out of him. And he's got, what, like 20 months left on his current deal? And at the current rate of going, you couldn't see either of them, you know, getting their contracts extended. But yeah, I definitely feel Klopp would probably swing more towards Naby Keita. And I mean, I actually have been impressed with Naby Keita. I know some parts of the Liverpool fan base weren't happy with him. But I felt he did. He did. Naby Keita is good at the parts that TV cameras don't pick up. You know, it's kind of, you kind of need to be in at Anfield to appreciate the small things that he does. But it's not picked up by TV cameras, so it doesn't look like he's doing a lot. But yeah, I would definitely, my feeling is Klopp is definitely swinging more towards Naby Keita than Oxlade-Chamberlain, when players miss a large chunk of time, like Oxlade-Chamberlain did, he got that injury against Roma in the semi-final. And if you don't then come back and play every single week, it makes it all the much harder to come back and find your rhythm, especially after a serious injury like that. You know, we're talking earlier about Joe Gomez, whereas Van Dijk and Matip are playing game after game, getting back into the rhythm. Gomez is here and there. It's going to take him a hell of a lot longer than Matip or Van Dijk. And actually, Chamberlain's the same. Like, especially with anterior cruciate ligament injuries, always takes players a long, long time to recover. And if you're not playing regularly, it just exacerbates the problem.
Yeah, one of Jurgen Klopp's favourite words, isn't it? Rhythm. He just loves to use that, and you can really understand why with things like that, like you say. But we will move on then finally for the final part of the podcast towards the attack. I think we've all been very impressed with Mohamed Salah so far. Diogo Jota and Sadio Mane getting plenty of goals as well. But we probably all agreed in the summer that they possibly needed one more, Charlotte. And probably on the early parts of this season, have we been proven right, do you think, so far? Or are we okay with the four that we've got so far?
I think I would have liked one more in the summer, but I think that we're all right so far. But that's mainly down to the form that Salah's in. He's been scoring for fun. Mane has been scoring as well. Obviously, he had, by his own standards, had a poor season last season. Even though he scored 11 goals in the league, but still not really his standard. But he started this season well, still looks a little erratic at times, but he scored four, hasn't he? So hopefully he's building his confidence back up. And then Jota started well, started looking a bit tired. But then, yes, on Sunday, it surprised me that he got the nod over Firmino in a game so big. But that tells you where Klopp's at with him. With Jota, he trusts him in them games. So I think Firmino's got a bit of a fight on his hands to get back into the team. But he's not away with Brazil now in this international break, so you should be expecting him to be flying after this. And he's going to get his chance because there's going to be games flying thick and fast. So I think we're in a good position there. But obviously, you can say it's about any team. But if Salah got an injury, then we'd be in danger then, wouldn't we? But obviously, let's not think about that.
Yeah, let's try and push that out of our minds for the time being, at least until it happens, or I suppose, until January, when he'll be away for a couple of games for the African Cup of Nations. But yeah, as I say, let's not talk about that for now. Let's talk a little bit, though, Emmett, about Sadio Mane. I think he's not been massively impressive so far, to be fair. I don't think it's been the best start to the season. He didn't have the greatest season last season either. But as Charlotte says, he is still scoring goals. He did score a really good goal against Manchester City as well. So I suppose as long as he keeps scoring, the rest of his performance maybe isn't quite so important.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, as a forward, his job is to score goals. And at the moment, he is scoring goals. But as Charlotte said, if Salah was to get injured, could you really rely on Jota, Mane and Firmino to carry Liverpool's title threat? You don't really see it currently, you know, unless Firmino happens to find his form quickly or Mane's overall game improves. But, I mean, as a forward, he's scoring goals. And you'd like to think that he would, you know, improve on his numbers in relation to last season when it was, you know, a poor season by his own pretty high standards. I mean, Mane's a tricky one too. He's kind of fighting for his future as well. You know, as we've talked about before, Liverpool have a lot of players with their contracts all expiring in the same summer. Games I haven't been overly impressed with Mane, but then he scores. You know, I really wasn't impressed with him for a large extent in the City game, but he scored. So as long as he's scoring, there's no real, you know, arguments from me.
Yeah, I suppose that's always going to be the case, isn't it? It's just a case of how long can he sustain that form without maybe playing as well as he possibly can, and hopefully he can get back to his best at some point. But just to finish off then, Charlotte, Divock Origi, Takumi Minamino deserve a little bit of a mention. I think we've seen little bits of them here and there, a couple of surprise inclusions at times, but I suppose the fact that we've not seen much more of them this season probably says a lot about how Jurgen Klopp views those two as well.
Yeah, I think it shows quite a lot when you're getting into late stages of a game and you could do with a goal or freshening it up top, and none of them get the nod. So it kind of proves where they're at. Where, I mean, obviously the inclusion of Origi in the AC Milan game was a shock to everyone, and I thought he played well. And then Minamino took his chance at Norwich, but obviously, it's a League Cup game. It's a different level to playing in the Premier League against Man City. And then later on, I mean, obviously, Firmino was on the bench. He was always going to come on. But you just thought, you saw the bench. You saw Origi was ill, weren't he, I think. But yeah. Minamino was on there. So, and you just knew you wouldn't see him. So I think, I don't know, it says it all, really.
Yeah, I think the same for Minamino as well against a 10-man Chelsea. Sadio Mane was struggling, but we just didn't see him come off the bench. But yeah, I'm sure there'll be a couple more surprise inclusions for the pair of them over the next few months. But I think that will do us for today's Liverpool.com podcast. We'll be back next week. Plenty more content to come across Blood Red 2 this international break to keep you entertained despite the lack of games for us to report on. If you haven't already, make sure to head over to bloodredpodcast.co.uk to sign up for our free Blood Red Club. That gives you even more exclusive bonus content each week. I'll be speaking to Bill's head of football, Christian Falk, for this week's episode, so make sure you're signed up in time for that one. For now, though, thank you very much to Charlotte Coates and to Emmett Gates for joining me. Thanks to you at home, too, for watching and for listening. And until next time, it's goodbye.